are listening to Better Off Dad, a podcast featuring three guys with 10 kids between them, stumbling their way through dad life. I'm Mike, an American voiceover guy trying to make these idiots sound professional. So here are your hosts, Shannon, Nathan, and James.
And welcome to Better Off Dad. I'm here with my co-host, Shannon and Kurt. Things are a little bit different tonight. That's right, I did say Kurt, because we're missing James tonight. Our third wheel is not here tonight. He's had a laceration to the hand. He's been off work. He's had some surgery. Well, we're not really missing him. We've got a very, very ready-made replacement here tonight with us. And before I introduce our very special guest and co-host, listen to these stats. This guy is a former NRL superstar, coming from a 17-year career. He's played over 250 games with the Newcastle Knights. He's the second most capped player in the club's history. He's a premiership player, club captain, NRL All-Star. He's represented New South Wales in State of Origin 12 times. He's captained the Blues as well. He's represented his country. Very impressive stats, much more impressive than James. But
here is Caruana once again. This time grabbed by Marco Mealy. Gidley. Seeing there was only one marker. Splits them to go down the field once again. A ball out the back for Rogers. He'll go for the line. A ball over the top for Mullen. And the Knights at their spectacular back. The support just kept on coming.
Every chance of that breaking down with Kurt Gidley and Ben Rogers until Gidley pulled out a piece of magic. There he is taking off Willie Mason. He had him beaten. Nate Miles, the A defender. Look at that there. Ben Rogers flicks from the outside back onto the inside. He draws both the fullback.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have with us tonight the one and only Kurt Gidley. Welcome to Better Off Dad, Kurt.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, boys. Great to be here. Look, I don't know, James, but like a laceration to the hand and you can't still do a podcast.
Precisely.
We're thinking the same thing. I'm glad you went there, Kurt.
That must be a hell of an injury.
You must have played over your career, mate, a 17-year career. You must have got yourself up over some pretty nasty injuries in time, but I believe this is more of a, it's more of an abrasion, I believe, than a cut. So it's pretty disappointing, really, yeah. Isn't it?
What is he? I think the only excuse for me, does he do sign language?
Well, he can't really speak English very well, so he'd probably make more sense if he did.
He's definitely better at sign language than talking, that's for sure. It's out of all those achievements, Kurt, and mate, that is an amazing. Just reading through that, we're blown away. So we really appreciate you are giving us your time here tonight. I believe your greatest achievement in life is, though, being a loving father to three beautiful children. How's dad life, Kurt?
Yeah, no, it's great fun. Look, to start with, a bit of background, I'm one of three boys to start with. So now I've got three of my own daughters, three beautiful daughters. So I'm very much outnumbered, mate, when it comes to girls in the household. You know, my wife and three young girls. I made sure I've got a little male dog. He's my offsider. But look, it's wonderful. You know, it's, you know, so many great times watching your kids grow up and, you know, challenges and but, you know, to have, you know, three beautiful daughters. As I said, I didn't have any sisters, so I didn't really know how much affection, how much love, unforgiving love they provide to their dad.
Yep.
So, yeah, yep. It's amazing. I love that part of being a dad. You know, I'm really proud. I want to push them and encourage them into whatever they want to do, whatever passions they have, and also just support them when they're, you know, going through some tough times in their life. So it's great.
I can certainly relate to that, Kurt. I'm a bit the same. I've got two older brothers, so I'm the youngest of three boys, and I've got three beautiful girls as well. Certainly enjoying that. It's a whole new experience, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly the same. Yeah, I'm the youngest of three boys. So, yeah, to have three daughters, I mean, yeah, you could dive a bit deeper into first-time wife and nappies out of a, you know, with a female.
I was going to say, how does that work? So with the boys, so I've got a house full of penises. You wipe up to a point and then you hit, like, some testicles. Yeah, it's like, I don't know how far you go.
Well, I used to have a fair, you know, a fair bit of integrity and morals and that sort of thing. But, mate, when you've got the job of cleaning a pooey nappy out of a small female baby girl, mate, you got to get it all out.
Well, this is the thing. You don't hear about this when you sign up to having a kid, I suppose.
No, no one told me about it neither, except for my wife when she was teaching me how to do it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's not pleasant and it feels like you're doing the wrong thing, but inevitably, you know, it's got to be, you've got to make sure you look after your kids
and 100%.
Make sure there's no infections and all that sort of thing going down. So it's all learning on the run.
For sure.
I think I'm still doing.
I had a mate who was really nervous about his wife was due to have their daughter, and for exactly that reason, just really awkward and uncomfortable about it. I think it's just, you know, it soon passes as a dad. It becomes very natural as you progress as a father. But a lot of people, a lot of guys are really daunted by that and don't talk about it too much. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's a really valid point. It's something we all have to do, isn't it?
We jumped in the deep end pretty early, boys, only a few minutes into it. But
yeah. And that was Kurt Gidley. Thank you very much for joining us. That's awesome, mate. That's awesome. It's funny when you say youngest of three boys. I'm not sure if it's anything like my household, but my mum and dad, I think, have got about 5 photos of me and about 500 of my 2 older brothers. So that sort of says a fair bit about where I'm ranked in the family, I think.
Yeah, I tried to go down the sympathy path, mate. I'm the youngest of three and I pretend I'm the favourite all the time. So I tried to milk that as much as I could. And yeah, I'll tell you the best thing about the youngest of three boys, I seem to get away with more like at a younger age, you know, going out, for example.
Definitely.
Or going to a party or, you know, jumping in the car with my older brothers and basically just being a pest and tagging along. The third wheel, you know.
What's the age difference? So Matt's the middle one, isn't he?
Matt's my oldest.
So, oh, is he?
Yeah, Matt's my oldest brother. He sort of played his, you know, full career at Newcastle Knights as well, and
yeah,
played in Australia, then went to England. He's 5 years older than me, and then my middle brother Adam, he's 2.5 years. So we kind of got 2.5 years between us.
So what did Adam do? Did Adam do anything notable, or is he like Dean War, the shit war?
The black sheep, all right. Yeah. No, he just played locally, footy with West Newcastle here, and but he, I must say, he played an important role. He was the biggest out of the three of us boys, and he was kind of the protector of the family too. If there was any shit going down at school or whatever,
or someone was bagging him out on a podcast.
Yeah, Shannon didn't realise he was the biggest one, so not a bad move there, basically. And you got to play, mate, you got to play with your brother, Matt, you got to play in the premiership with him at Newcastle?
Well, I debuted in the premiership year, so 2001, I was pretty lucky to debut in August of that year, and I played predominantly the full year of reserve grade, and we sort of got knocked out the week before the grand final in reserve grade, unfortunately, but stuck around for the week of the team winning the 2001 grand final. So I didn't take the field. And I probably, to be honest, I was too young and didn't deserve to be on the field. It was just great to be part of the build-up to that game. And I'm born and bred in Newcastle. So we've only had 2 grand finals, one in 97, which I witnessed, you know, just as a young kid. And then 2001 to be sort of just on the fringe and experience almost as a player. And then the build-up to be around the camp and then the celebrations was awesome, but you know I wanted a piece of that myself.
Well, to the people that like our listenership isn't massive, and it'd be fair to say the majority of them are probably from down this end of the southern end of the world. How do you describe Newcastle as a city? Like I've been there. I'm a big fan. How do you describe it as a city?
Oh, I love that Newcastle. Is a real blue collar, has a real blue collar culture. We're a working class town. The BHP was one of the biggest employers of personnel in Newcastle. It really underpinned what Newcastle was about from a manufacturing and blue collar working class culture. BHP closed down in the 90s, and that was a huge blow to the town. Kind of on the back of that, it still continued to be a blue collar working class town because of the mining industry in the Hunter Valley.
Yeah.
So a lot of the mines are only sort of between an hour, 50 minutes to an hour and a half up the road at Singleton and Musselbrook. But the supply chain that goes from, you know, coal miners who actually work in the coal mines anywhere from, you know, in Newcastle or the Hunter Valley, but then you've got all the coal trains. My dad was a coal train driver for 20-plus years. That, you know, brought our family stability and security. And then you've got the coal loaders at our our port here, Newcastle Port, which it's the biggest exporter of coal in the world. And I know, you know, everyone's got their opinions on coal and where that should be from an environmental point of view, but look, it kind of underpins the Australian economy, which I think plays a big part in our town, but also for the money it generates for the government and for us.
I wouldn't worry too much about political views on this place, mate. So you just touched on your old man, coal train driver. What was his influence? Like, we did our last podcast with dads, our own dads. So what was your old man's influence on you? Was he a humorous man? Was he, you know, what's the story there?
First thing that comes to mind, he seemed to be always pretty stressed, but I think we put a fair bit of the stress on
him.
I've got three young girls, and, they have their moments. They're pretty good. You know, it might be a bit emotional here and there, but, like, I know other
bit like me
who have got boys, and they just say they're mad, and I'm starting to have a little bit of guilt about the shit and the stress we maybe put our mum and dad through, because we'll just always want to be doing something, or footy or cricket or mucking around or wrestling or setting up the backyard with, you know, high jump or mud footy down the park. But I tell you, like, going back to your question, he worked shift work, so we didn't miss out on anything, you know, whether it was school sport or footy on the weekend or nippers, you know, during summer. So I don't know how they did it, to be honest, with three young boys all playing different sports at different times of the year. And I appreciate it a lot more now than in my early years.
Was it always footy, Kurt, as a kid?
Yeah, no, it was any sport. Like, footy was the most enjoyable and dominant one. But, you know, as soon as summer rolled around and, you know, summer cricket was on TV, like, this was another part. The old man used to take pride in his lawn, but mate, we'd be mowing a cricket pitch through the lawn. It's not there, and sort of rolling an area where the stumps are just to get a bit more bounce in the pitch. And that was all because, you know, that's what you did during summer, watching one days and that sort of thing in test matches.
What do you bowl a bit of right arm outswing, mate?
Mate, I was a little bit of a leggy. Like, it was a short pitch, you know, we'd start with a tenner, you'd tape up half a tenner, and it was getting a bit of swing.
Yeah.
And then you'd sort of transfer to a cricket ball, but then, you know, the cricket ball always ended up at the end of the side of the house with, you know, cherry marks all over it. So I can imagine why the old man was stressed.
Yeah. Now, I was just about to say that. I was just going to say there, you talked about the stress that your dad had. Well, I walked into daycare today. I think I touched on this earlier. I walked into daycare today and they said, you let them boys watch WWE or something. They were literally under the table wrestling. They're 15 months old wrestling under the table. And it was better than the week before when I walked in there, and apparently they'd been wrestling all the other, you know, 12-month-old kids. So, yeah, it's all ahead of me anyway.
I was very happy to hear that's still going on, because that also played a big part in my brother and my life. Like, I was rooming with my middle brother. We had bunks, and, mate, you know, between the Ultimate Warrior and Hacksaw Jim Duggan and...
That's awesome.
All those characters in WWF, like, we were jumping off the top bunk, and it was, yeah. So it's great to hear that kids are still wrestling.
Yeah, it was a big part, wasn't it? Massive growing up, the wrestling back in the day. It was just the highlight of the week. I think it used to come on Thursday nights here, and Mum and Dad used to let us start from, I mean, most nights we'd go to bed at a reasonable time, but on the wrestling night, we were allowed to start a little bit later. So Thursday nights, it was all in. So me and my brothers would sit on the couch waiting for the wrestling to start. Right. And like you just said, those names and, good fun.
You wouldn't have been sitting there much, I don't reckon. I reckon 5 minutes into it, you would be late
most of what they're doing
anyway.
My mum used to let me sit up and watch the Dolly Parton show, so that probably explains a few things.
Yeah, that explains a fair bit, I'd say, mate. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Who's this Hacksaw guy?
Hacksaw Jim
Duggan.
He used to come in the
2x4. Yeah, 4x2. Oh. I was singing 9 to 5, whatever. Anyway, moving on.
Used to come out waving the American flag, I think. Yeah. Or maybe Dolly did too, Shannon, I'm not sure.
She wasn't waving a flag, she was waving something else.
Oh. Coming from that blue-collar background, is that something, I suppose, with your work now as a business development manager for Protech, it sounds like a, a pretty perfect fit for you, sort of coming from that background into the role that you're doing now. Was that something that was stumbled upon, or was it something that was planned, or were you approached, or how did that all come about?
Yeah, no, it wasn't something that was planned. Like, I finished with footy in England for 2 years. I finished at the Knights in 2015. I didn't want to go to any other NRL clubs, and I wanted to have a crack over in England. So we moved over there. I had two young girls at that stage, my wife and I, and then was always sort of coming back after a couple of years, and went into a business development role at the Knights, my first year out of footy, which was a good little stepping stone sort of away from,
yep,
you know, living and breathing the roller coaster of win and loss as a player or a coach. So it was a good sort of stepping stone into a bit more business world. And then I was actually selling Brad, my manager in Protex, and corporate hospitality tickets to the footy, and got approached and thought, look, it's a good opportunity to have a crack at something new, take myself out of my comfort zone a bit, and you know, as far as career growth, I thought it was a good opportunity. So, but yeah, I guess the working class, the blue collar culture of the town, a lot of the sponsors at the Newcastle Knights were kind of mining blue collar. Not all the sponsors, but a lot of that influence is invested back into the footy club, and then yeah, you know, there's a lot of community work that's done by the players back into those industries as well. So they kind of, it kind of is a bit of history underlying history there. So even now we're starting to tap into a bit more of the rail industry, and I guess that there's a lot of connections and guys who I'm crossing paths with that knew my dad, and I guess that's pretty cool.
It is cool. Like I love watching. So I follow you on LinkedIn. I love seeing that connection you have, as you know. You're not a big head, like you're a man of the people, let's be honest. And those you know, you do pre-starts and get there at 6 and do barbecues with like guys in fluoro, like I'm a boilermaker, and like there would be nothing better than see, you know, the local club captain of a national football comp being there doing that. You pick your young family up, move them over to the UK. I'm about to embark on exactly the same thing. How old were your kids when you travelled, and how much Finnegan did you give them?
No, I did ask. I asked the question, and then I heard the response was, look, it can go either way. It can send them really droopy and sleepy, or it can send them bananas. So
My auntie, so we touched on Finnegan in the first or second episode, and my auntie heard it during the week, and she was horrified that I'd even consider it. anyway,
was a nurse, so
she wouldn't
go there. But yeah. I was thinking about having a crack at it myself, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. No, but mate, so you moved your family over three. Oh wow, okay, yep.
Yeah.
Three, so I'm right smack back in the middle, bang in the middle with two of them. So yeah. We're heading to Yorkshire, flying in. We're going to move to Bridlington. Yeah, so we're selling everything, selling the salon, packing up, moving over there in late November, early December. So,
Yorkshire.
Yeah, awesome spot.
Yorkshire. No, that's what I was. Because I played.
You would have played Leeds, wouldn't you?
So we were Lancashire and Warrington.
Yeah.
So the Lancashire Yorkshire rivalry is massive.
Yeah.
It was one real highlight of playing over there. There was heaps of highlights, but they have smaller crowds at the rugby league just because it's not as big, obviously, as the NRL or the BPL over there. But their fans are so passionate.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, the songs they come up with and the chants and the singing and the abusive things they're saying to each other's fans. Pretty cool.
Well, Jen's cousins, who I'm very good mates with, they're about my age. They were sort of soccer hooligans in the late 80s, early 90s. So I sort of get that vibe from them. They're pretty level these days, but they you know, it's the same at the league. That, like, they're all just mad. They're mad, the Yorkshire people. Yeah. I married one.
So, Kurt, obviously a massive move, mate, for yourself and your wife and a young family to relocate to England for a 2 year period. How did that go? How did they go with the girls settling and everything?
Yeah, well, look, my wife and I are both from Newcastle. We've never moved out of our own hometown, which has been great. You know, I never had to go to another NRL club and pack up and move and relocate. So that was great. But I was ready for a change, sort of 2015, and Look, my brother had been to England for 4 years and played at St Helens in the Super League with a young family. Another good mate of mine, Danny Medeiros, went to Leeds for 3 years with a young family, and they both, you know, spoke so highly of the whole experience, you know. The footy experience, number one. They played in some great games. They played in good clubs. They loved the culture. I love travelling. My wife loves travelling. So it was a bit of a no-brainer. Like, it's still daunting, obviously, when you're leaving your mum and dad and all the help that you would normally lean on.
For sure.
But you've got to have a supporting partner, and I was there to, you know, support my wife, and my wife was there to support my career, and we were both excited about the life experience, and it, you know, we got so much more than what we expected to in those just 2 years. So it was amazing.
Speaking about growing up in Newcastle and obviously playing with football there and having a fantastic career, I can imagine you walking around Newcastle now, you're getting stopped quite regularly. Do the kids realise dad's not your normal dad? Why does everybody want to stop and talk to dad?
Yeah, my eldest daughter was around, obviously, when I was playing at the Knights. And then both the girls, my middle daughter thought I only played for Warrington, like Wolfies, Warrington Wolves, so she called them Wolfies. So she only thought I played there, which is kind of funny. But now both of them sort of go to school, and they ask a few funny questions, you know, when they come home, or if people call me up or ask for a signature. So, but they're a bit, it's another.
Yeah, well, you're lucky, as an NRL player, you're lucky dad wasn't caught in a sex tape. So that's a bonus.
no camera phones anyway when I was getting out of the but I guess, you know, it's you guys would know, you know, your kids, whatever comes across their mind, they're just so honest, they just say whatever's coming through their head. So kind of refreshing sometimes to see what thoughts go through their head, you know, when those situations sort of unfold. So, but you know, they're pretty rat's ass, to be honest, who I am or what I was.
I'm sure dad probably gets home and just flicks on a couple of YouTube clips just to remind them occasionally.
Oh, yeah. Whoa, you kid! Now, moving into not a more serious tone, but from my time, like, you came down to Tassie here a couple of years ago with Matty Capuano and did a bit of a tour about and did some a couple of keynote conversations with a few employers that we had down here, and your message was fantastic, and you actually really got through to a few guys here in the local area off the back of there was a suicide that week, and your message touched a couple of guys, and I actually watched you have 15 minutes in the corner of a welding bay with a guy.
Yeah,
you took 15 minutes with him, I reckon 10-15 minutes with him. And I've seen him since, and he reckons that to him was just what he needed to hear, just that you cared and whatever. Yeah. You do this pretty regularly now. Like, do you want to touch on that?
It's something that I'm passionate about. You know, I think coming from a team environment where I was, you know, I spent so much time, you know, I was playing footy from when I was, you know, 7 years old. But I was playing, you know, soccer or cricket or whatever sport I could play, AFL, even at school when I could. But then obviously once you start to move through the grades and it gets a bit more serious, you spend so much time with your teammates and your coaching staff that you have a real – and then I was captain for a long time at Newcastle Knights. So I had a real responsibility to look after the duty of care of my teammates and on the field, that is, too, off the field. And I could tell when the guys were going through different challenges in their life, whether it be, you know, breaking up their girlfriend or bloody going out too much or punting too much or, you know, abusing drugs or whatever it might be. So I kind of enjoy the responsibility, and I had to be comfortable in asking some tough questions at times. And I think through those experiences, I still have a passion behind taking some care in people that I know, people that I don't know. And I've had some really, really good guest speakers during my footy career that have had a real impact on my personal life and that I still carry today. One of the guys who I'd encourage anyone to look up, he spoke at every NRL club. I know he spoke at a lot of AFL clubs. I know he's pretty tight. I think it's Collingwood. He's a fellow by the name of Hugh Van Kleinberg. From the Resilience Project, legend Hugh. We were the first. My brother Matt was the CEO at the Knights at the time. He was the first person to get him in into rugby league. And Newcastle, the Knights were the first team to sort of pilot his program. And a really good mate of mine, Chris Houston, we both say that some of his principles were life-changing for us. And his story was amazing. The way he presented was amazing. And the three things that really resonated with us that I know Hugh still speaks about today is practicing GEM, gratitude, empathy, and mindfulness. And, I mean, he's got a pretty personal story of why and how he got into that space of building resilience and looking after our own mental health and well-being and those around us. So I know he's done hundreds or thousands of school kids, professional sporting people, business people. So
how do you implement that in your life, mate? Like, so you've got a group of mates, or what do you do?
Well, practicing gratitude. I do it with my kids now. So sitting around the dinner table, we just did it tonight again. Because we're always... Our mind is always has a negative biased power, I guess. So it always likes to think of, okay, what's going wrong, or what could go wrong today or tomorrow, or what went bad during my day today. So we have to train our minds and our brain to reflect on, okay, what went well during the day, and what am I grateful for? And could be, like, I go for a swim at the beach every day, rain, hail or shine. You know, I enjoy training with half a dozen of my former teammates. So, you know, having a hot shower or drinking water out of a tap down the park where you don't get crook from. So we can be grateful for the smallest things in our lives. You know, having a healthy family, you know, healthy kids, or medical assistance when we need it. So it's about reflecting on our day and also teaching my kids. Okay, well, tell me about something that you're grateful for today. Just around the dinner table, simple.
Yeah,
it's about practice. Cool. And this was all learned through Hugh for me. So I still live and breathe that today. And that's one thing. That was just gratitude, showing empathy. And I knew this. I didn't know it was empathy or during footy, but you know, when you go and do community work as a professional athlete, it's probably one of the most fulfilling things you can do when you're playing, because it's really grounding and takes you away from the seriousness of sport and, you know, the win and loss result. Like, if you can give back to your community, or, you know, have a chat to the parents of a sick kid in the hospital, or go to a nursing home, or, you know, help out some community work, it's really fulfilling.
Yeah.
And free. Like, it doesn't cost you anything.
I had this strange feeling when I finished reading that book that I just wanted to... You almost want to just shout it from the rooftops, don't you? I know. I sent a copy out to my brothers to read. I thought everybody should read this book. Now, I've never heard Hugh speak apart from, you know, online. Book really touched me, and I know it touched a lot of people. It had such a profound effect after reading that you wanted to share it.
Yeah, I still read, like, my wife bought me the book for my birthday, but, you know, I'd heard him speak. I've met him a number of times. I still watch his videos on YouTube, and I still got his book, and I read it, and I still got a highlighter out, highlighting things that I thought were important, you know, to remember.
I actually listened to it as an audio book, and the beauty of that was, because it sort of listened to it driving to work and stuff, the beauty of it was that Hugh actually read the audio book, so it almost sounded like, you know, I don't know.
They're the best audio books. I agree,
especially when it's the author is actually reading it. It kind of just hit home a little bit more, I thought.
You can't read anyway, so that's something you can be great – that's something you can be grateful for is audio.
It was perfect for me, mate. So you get around now, Kurt. You do a bit of speaking.
Yeah, well, it wasn't part of my sort of plans, but I guess, you know, I'm passionate about it. I'm, you know, constantly learning. Hugh was only one person that had a great influence on my life. When I took the role as BDM at ProTech, you know, I was asked to talk at some toolbox talks, and I knew they were sort of more focused around safety and things that were sort of out of my job description, really. But then when I sort of had a chat to a few people that, you know, the mental health and well-being of blue-collar workers, I know construction industry, the statistics are a lot higher than the average across, you know, suicide rates and mental health problems. So it's relevant, and it's really important to that market. And if that's the market that we are working in, that we're supplying people to, then it's something that I should be able to do. It's something that I put my hand up to. If I'm asked to do it, then I do it. I don't sort of go out there and and do it, you know, every day or every week. It's more, yep. If someone's if one of our clients asks us, then I'm happy to do it.
It's breaking down that stigma, isn't it?
Yeah,
and that's what it is. We can all be involved in that. It's about talking about it and being more open about it, and breaking down those walls with it. That's the key, isn't it? I think
it is definitely, especially for men. Like we bottle stuff up, and until we keep bottling up until it just becomes a disaster, and attempts to make the wrong move that you can't change again. So and I guess I felt really uncomfortable sort of the first couple of times I've done it, just because being. Ex-footy player, I wasn't sure how I was viewed speaking on that topic, or maybe I wasn't on their level being a general labourer or a rail worker or whatever it was. So, but I knew I was hitting the mark when I was getting guys who I had never met before. They'd stick around after it and come up to me, and I'm talking like young blokes, older blokes, down in Tassie, at the parks. In Newcastle, so I've always had someone come up to me and wait till everyone else sort of moves away and shared a real personal story out of nowhere, and I think that makes me really proud that they've trusted.
Powerful
me.
Stuff, isn't it?
So it's hit the mark, which is that's what I'm trying to achieve there.
I don't mean to move along too quickly, Kurt, but your jumper you've got on there, what's that all about?
Well, mate, if you're going back to our earlier conversation, mate, when you said, what's Newcastle about? And I said, mate, we're a working-class blue-collar town. And I mentioned the BHP. Well, Newcastle had a name, a renowned name, to be the Steel City, from the BHP days, because it was such a working-class and big employer.
That's a guess, I'm all Castries, across that, mate. I've got a lot of family live in Newcastle,
Castries, you heard of that one? Yeah, so, steel and manufacturing is still a big part of the economy and employment over Castries. But in the last sort of couple of years and more recently, there's four of my ex-teammates, Matty Johns, Andrew Johns, two pretty famous brothers, Denny Badiris, who, he was Australian origin captain. So there's four of us footy boys, and then a few other names, a few of our surfer mates. We're all kind of in the surfer. Matty Johns is in the surfer, but Joey loves it. Ex-professional surfer.
Right.
Won Bell's Beach in 97, Matt Boyd.
Didn't he just win a silver medal at the Olympics? The
World Tours, Ryan
Gunn. No, that was the equestrian. Ours Andrew Hoy. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
Okay. long way from equestrian. I'm talking this place
got
tattooed from head to tail and is absolutely mad. So Ryan Callan's on the tour at the moment, and another fellow, Craig Anderson, who's very, very famous free surfer. So we're all Newcastle boys. So we wanted to come up with our own beer.
You can't see this, but Kurt's picked up his can there. It's a delicious-looking can too.
Yeah, Steel City Lager is the silver can, and the Steel City Pale Ale is the blue can. So
nice. And that's out now, Kurt?
That's it. It's just in New South Wales. So it's basically just in the Hunter Valley at the moment. It'll just be in New South Wales until we sort of keep growing.
Mate, we're going to be pumping that right up on our socials for sure. The Steel City Beer Company. That sounds really good. It's funny you say that when you say it's every man's dream. I was recently having lunch at a vineyard and we got talking to the owners there. There's a young guy there and he was saying, you'd be amazed. Everybody that comes here for lunch leaves here. All the guys want to go home and open a vineyard. They say to their wives, he said, virtually all we are is we're glorified. We're farmers. We just so happen to have a vineyard in the middle of our property, and we sell wine, and everyone goes nuts for wine. And I remember going home that day saying to my wife, I want to be a farmer.
This is Dad Hacks.
Okay, so this week, this is more of a discipline thing that you do with your babies. So instead of like hitting them or instead of smacking your babies, you just pick them up. So let's say they're grabbing a pot plant and pulling dirt and stuff out. Instead of hitting them or like smacking them around the face or anything, you pick them up and you go and put them in their cot and you say no, and that's it.
But that's a dad hack.
Well, it's a
This is why we don't do it, Kurt. This is why we don't do it, because it just ends up being absolute rubbish every time. And I'm gonna go back and edit it all out every week. Right, okay. That's it for Dad X. We're done with that.
Righto. Okay, Kurt, you got one?
Look, mate, I've learned, through girls, preparation is everything. So if it's going to the beach, if it's getting ready for school the next day, so a lot of these are when my wife's not around.
This is bullshit, mate. You're just coming off. Out. You're just talking. You're just talking a Bluey episode.
Bluey. But, mate, I'm talking like lay out the shoes, the socks, the tights, everything there so you can get them up, get them in the work and get going. Like, I love getting out and going somewhere, but there's always a drama or something missing.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
So preparation, although is not high on a priority, like when you're about to shut your eyes and go to sleep, it pays off in the long run.
Yep.
For the next morning, if you want to get out and
it's actually a good day.
You've got to be prepared, and it takes effort. And the other one, don't take tights to swimming lessons because you can't wet legs. Don't take tights because you can't pull them up with kids, especially girls, because girls like wearing tights. Take trackies,
right,
or just take the towel that slips over.
That's a dad hack. We've been going for 5 weeks, Kurt, trying to actually get a dad hack, and that's actually the first one that makes any sense with what we've been doing. And
this is probably why he captained New South Wales.
I think James has made a massive mistake here. He has made a massive mistake. I'm thinking Kurt's getting pretty comfortable here, and it's like an opening batsman, like missing a game because he's got gastro, and then the feeling getting 200. This is what's happening here. He's in all sorts of trouble.
I've seen it all before.
In all sorts of trouble.
It's like Bon Scott when he died, and then old mate come in.
Yeah.
Brian May rolls in.
Brian May?
Brian May.
He was in Queen, mate.
Brian Johnson. What's his name? Brian
Johnson.
Brian Johnson.
But he was never as good as Bond, so that's a poor example, really.
Yeah, no. That makes no sense. I think he got shafted recently for Axl Rose.
I think Axl came in for a while, yeah. That's it's a strange example, Sean.
I've got my guns. You can tell
it's an old Rocky, can't you? It's like seeing the teenage girls walking around now in Nirvana t-shirts. It's exactly the same as you wearing a Guns N' Roses t-shirt, I reckon. Yeah. So do you get back to the club much, Kurt? Just changing off topic a little bit, but do you get back there much?
I'm an ambassador of the clubs, which what does that mean? I work every home game. Normally when they're actually playing at home. Myself and one of my former teammates, Mark Hughes. So we do, we host a couple of the boxes up in the corporate lounge.
Yeah, right.
Interview a couple of the players who aren't playing, and I normally try and get one of our old boys who used to play for the club, and everyone likes to, especially most of the guests in those boxes, want to reminisce about the old days. So it's always good interviewing an ex-player who, I looked up to. It's pretty exciting doing that.
Who's your favourite ex-player?
Chief, me, probably. Yeah. I mean, I played with Joey. I forgot to play with Andrew Johns.
You're a bit of a name dropper, aren't you, mate?
Well, mate, you asked who they are. who was the funnest player or on and off the field? Joey was Joey was it.
Yeah.
But who is the person, who I still sort of admire, I guess, is that's Chief Paul Harrigan.
Well, I'll tell you what, we wouldn't get a better segue for the dad's jokes.
Oh, you got a dad? Joke?
We have dad jokes. And I
hope this is better than the dad hack.
Oh, mate, his dad jokes are no better at all. They're absolutely shocking. I don't even know who tells jokes anymore, but we continually dish up Shannon's dad joke. He gets all excited about it, so I suppose we better go again.
Well, the dad joke, it's actually one of the favourite parts of the show for a lot of our listeners,
your family.
Anyway, so normally I run two jokes. I'll run the dad joke, which is literally for your kids, but then there's the dad to dad joke, which is a bit fruity. Excuse me, my James Squires.
Obviously not having a Steel City beer over there, mate. By the look of it.
Well, I tell you what, I'll be getting a carton sent down, Kurt, when you get an opportunity. So here's the dad's joke that you can use with your kids. And I'm going to keep it geographical. So a T-Rex got arrested this week going up the street in Newcastle. I don't know. Can you say something, Nathan? Like, oh, yeah, what do you get arrested
you
for?
Did leave it open for a question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hold on.
Let me go again. So Nathan. Hey, Nathan.
Yeah, Shannon.
A T-Rex got arrested up the main street of Newcastle during
the week.
Really?
What did he get arrested for?
He got arrested for being a small arms dealer.
This is why we don't encourage him.
Come on. It hasn't missed. It hasn't missed. Anyway, okay, so that's that joke. So this one here, well, it's not really fruity, but it's just a little bit controversial and possibly offensive. So this one got sent in. It's from Queensland, from M. Bella. M. Bella from Queensland.
Bella.
What? Oh, possibly. I don't know. Good player? Yeah, okay. So what is more intelligent, Paul Harrigan or a bag of offal? A bag of offal.
Yeah, no, is that it?
Yeah, oh. Okay, so that's
Look, sorry about this, Kurt. So I'm really sorry about this. I didn't expect this. I don't expect you to give up your time on a weeknight for this.
So, Nathan,
for the record, if Chief is listening, this has nothing to do with the show. This is you on your own, Shannon, too. So I don't want to.
Okay,
don't
so Nathan, this is where you cut in your new YouTube ability to cut in a really good bit of highlight. So if you can go back to that.
On the back side. So a big stink on over on the other side of the ground. Harrigan and Bella having a go at it. Standing there, trading one.
Go, boys.
4-1. Nothing wrong with that. Two big men having a go. Blowing off a bit of steam. Now there's a bit in the background. Wallace and Elias.
There's a couple of blokes don't like each other. Now they're into it. Wallace and Elias.
It's on now. It's on. Look at Bella. Look at the eyes of Bella. Oh, fired up. Big Barney. The Chief says, if you want to go, I'll go with you.
Well, I respect Martin's courage, but he's picked the wrong man, hasn't he?
Oh, dear.
If you're going to have a choice there, he's the last man in line, Paul Harrigan.
Well, both of them in a dark lane. No thanks, Elias.
Kurt, you spoke earlier as well, mate, about catching up with your ex-teammates and guys quite regularly, and I believe you did touch on about having a bit of a you catch up and work out together and keep yourself pretty active. Now, Shannon was complaining the other week about getting a dad bod. Have you got any tips for all the dads out there to avoid getting a Shannon rig at the moment? Or
I was going to say he obviously hasn't taken up the same sort of. Post career, you know, catch up with his ex teammates as me. But,
steady on.
I was talking to someone this afternoon. Where it came from, I came back from England 2017, and my good mate Mark Hughes, he went through brain cancer. Mark did totally out of nowhere. Three young kids at that stage, wife and three young kids, and just bloody rocked him and the family and rocked everyone, you know, the whole community and his former teammates. So, you know, he had surgery and set up the Mark Hughes Foundation, which is amazing, the money they've raised for brain cancer research now. But every year there's lots of fundraisers throughout the year, the NRL with the Beanie Round. But at the end of every year, Mark and the foundation do a big challenge. So normally it's around a physical challenge. So they done Kokoda 1 year, raised a lot of money. A lot of ex-players went on that. The second year, I just got back from England and we went to Everest Base Camp.
Oh, wow.
Was amazing. You know, yeah. Never on my list of places to do.
That's awesome.
I challenged myself. But we had 28 guys on that and, you know, 14 ex-players, Chief Matty Johns and my brother Matt, which is great, Danny Medeiros. So it was awesome, great challenge.
Yeah, I reckon.
Raised a lot of money. Really tough, really tough, really tough.
How long was that over, Kurt? How long was that?
About 10 days, I think it was.
Yeah, wow. 10 days. Gee whiz, yeah.
And tough, the altitude sort of is challenging. So anyway, that was sort of, I'd only just retired, you know, for a few weeks and went on that. And then I said to Hughesy when we got back, man, I'm keen to sort of keep, you know, ticking along just some exercise. I don't want to go as hard as well. You know, when I was playing, I'm done with all that, but I'm still want to keep fit.
Yep.
And he said, "Oh man, I've got a. I was been away for 2 years." He said, "I've got a good little gym that I'll set up at home. I don't really use it, but I'm looking for a partner." I said, "Yeah, perfect." So he's only just down the road, and
oh, perfect.
We started you know, set the alarm early and getting up and have a little workout. And then, you know, we got Chief was looking for the same thing. He hadn't really – he was doing more stretching than anything because, you know, his body's pretty –
My mate Chief. Yeah.
Your mate. Yeah.
It was.
So, yeah, anyway, it's evolved. We've been doing it for like 3 years now, and, man, it's a great start of the day. We do it outdoors as much as we can, whenever it's going to be sunny. We've got a little WhatsApp group that we text each other the night before, and it's awesome. It's a great start of the day. We just do half an hour workout. We go for a quick swim in the ocean, and we go for a coffee and have a laugh. Way to start the day.
You miss that. I mean, Shannon and I sort of only played footy at a local level sort of thing, but you miss that probably more than anything, that catch up after a game or the coffee during the week or a few beers on the weekend. That you miss it, don't you? To be able to sort of replicate that again once you've retired, I think that's awesome.
Anyone can do it. And in fact, I'd encourage everyone to actually grab a partner because, you know, going to the gym or setting your alarm early, yeah, because everyone's busy, so with kids or work, so you've got to do it sort of, you know, in dark or, you know, on sunrise or after work.
Yep.
I like to do it early, so I've got it done out of the way, but it's just so much easier if you've made a commitment to someone the night before and you've texted them and said, look, this is where I'll meet you, and, you know, when your alarm goes off and you're not too keen to jump out of bed, you've made the commitment to your mate or several mates, and you can meet them at the gym or you can meet them down the beach or you meet them wherever. It doesn't matter what doesn't really matter what the session is, to be honest, but just get up, meet them, knock out something, go for a coffee, go for a swim, go for a workout, whatever it is. And I don't think I've heard too many people regret that.
Yeah.
They do it for that day.
I don't think you can underestimate the effect that has on your mental health as well. Just that clarity for the rest of the day.
Well, you know, research has backed it up.
Yep.
It's proven that it has an impact on your mental health.
Yeah.
And I can vouch for that because I live and breathe it. But
we've filled up Kurt for probably way too long tonight after a bit of a few false starts. But I suppose two things I wanted to sort of finish off with, because it is a talk about his career and everything for the rest of the night easily. But I suppose, you know, we want to get back and talking about being a dad, because that's what we're about here, is a dad podcast. I suppose what I wanted to ask Kurt was, what do you enjoy most about being a dad? A simple question like that. What's the most enjoyable thing about being a dad for you?
Probably the fun we have together, and whether it's us as a family or probably me taking the girls out, whether it's bike riding or, you know, skateboarding or bushwalking or going down the park. We have plenty of fun. Like, I think, you know, when you have, you know, one girl and then two girls, everyone starts to talk about, oh, you must be trying for a boy for third. And that wasn't the purpose of having a third child. Like, it wasn't to try for a boy.
Yep.
He's quite rude to be actually asking that sort of type of question.
Yeah.
So to have three girls, and I treat my girls exactly as if I'd have three boys, or if I had three boys. So I don't hold them back from anything.
Do you want one?
I don't hold them back from anything that they would want to do. You know, whether it's surfing.
Do you want one, Kurt? I've got heaps of them.
But yeah, we just have plenty of fun, and you know, we play footy, we play soccer, we ride bikes, we do whatever, dress things up and all that type of girly stuff, makeup. So that's kind of the fun part. That
it's good fun. Good fun.
Have you run any fingernail polish out in public yet?
On my toes, I have, because it's pretty tough to get off, to be honest, sometimes. So. But I'm also at the stage where I don't really give a shit now, too, neither.
Like, yeah,
exactly.
That's part of dad life, isn't it? Just not giving a shit and just rolling with it and having fun. And that's the key, I reckon. Just go along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But, mate, we can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I could sit here and talk to you for another hour. Like, it's just been so easy to talk to you, and we really appreciate the time you've given us. We're a little podcast. We're looking to sort of, I suppose, evolve weekly, and I think we've taken another step forward this week by having you on and talked about some things that we haven't talked about previously before. So I can't thank you enough, mate. Yeah, coming on tonight, and you're a legend. Thanks, Kurt Gidley, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks very much, boys, and good luck on the podcast, and good luck with the dad duties, everyone.
Yeah, good on you, mate. Stay safe. Good on you. Thank you.
Please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on and leave a review. Please be nice.
Thank you for listening to Better Off Dad.